Some people would say that engineering will drive a person off the deep end and make him crazy. Jim Grum Graham may be proof of that. Jim is our guest coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome in, everybody. Kirk Harnack, and I got a real quick announcement for you here before we jump right into the show with Jim Graham. He's standing by. Nautel, you know Nautel. They've got a couple of things going on. I'm going to get to these Transmission Talk Tuesdays in just a moment. First, though, you need to know about the couple of promotions that are going on at Nautel. The limited time offer, it's the free backup exciter, or the free second backup exciter, with your purchase of a GV series transmitter. Now that's the big boy. There's 20 kilowatt and 40 kilowatt versions of that. There may be others. Talk to your rep from Nautel to get a free second backup exciter. Now, if your needs are not for a 20 or a 40 kilowatt FM transmitter, but more modest, let's say a Nautel VS 2.5 transmitter. Right now, they're having this thing called the 4610 VS savings promotions. There's math involved. So here's how it works. Right now, you get $4,000 off a VS 2.5. That's a 2.5 kilowatt FM transmitter from Nautel. I've got one of these. Love it. And you get $4,000 straight off the price of that. That's the current promotion. But if you get the HD package that goes on to that, the HD, exciter thingy, $6,000 off of that. So you combine those two, it's just math, you actually can get $10,000 off of that package. What a deal from Nautel. Contact your nearest Nautel rep. You can go to the website and check these out. You can verify what I'm telling you at nautel.com/offers. Nautel.com/offers. The other thing you need to know about is Transmission Talk Tuesdays. These are continuing. They've been very successful, continuing on into August. They're taking 1 week off, and that would be, two weeks off. Anyway, the next one is coming up August the 17th. It says right here, August the 17th, when the topic is MPX over AES. That's multiplex over AES. So it's a digital MPX signal. Why this is a good thing, how to feed your transmitter with this. And Jeff Welton is the host, but I'm going to be the guest. I've got some expertise here, so we're going to talk about it, but you can be on the show too. That's the cool thing about Nautel's Transmission Talk Tuesday. It's not a webinar. It's actually a roundtable discussion. We kick it off, but we take your comments and questions. Also, the next topics are building with Raspberry Pi. Really? Okay. August 24th, we're going to have a webinar, roundtable on building with Raspberry Pi. And then August 31st, the very last Tuesday, the last day of August this year, car dashboards and hybrid radio. That's coming up. To register. And by the way, if you're watching our show live, the registration link is not up yet. It'll be up coming up on Friday, August the 6th. Friday, August 6th, go to nautel.com/webinars. nautel.com/webinars. Sign yourself up for any of these or all three of them. They'll send you a couple reminder notices, and you can attend. So that's it. Check it out at nautel.com/webinars. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb there at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio. Wait a minute. There's something wrong on the set. I just realized I didn't turn my little sign on back here. Thank you, Charles Sather. Charles Sather from Alaska made that for me. Thank you very much, Charles. So we're glad to have you here. We're doing a fun show today, a fun show about fun radio and fun engineering, and it's all going to be good. Yes, as I said, I'm coming to you from the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a beautiful day here today, and I want to give you a quick reminder about my friends at Radio Guide. This is a great magazine. It comes out 6 times a year, every 2 months. And the articles in here, the engineering articles, are more in-depth than you'll find in most other places. You can also get to Radio Guide online at radio-guide.com. radio-guide.com. I suggest you go there, bookmark it, and hey, if you can sign up to get the paper version, that would be awesome as well. And here's a teaser. You should see the centerfold in Radio Guide every 2 months. Let's bring our guest here, who's going to... He's going to be my straight man on the show.
And right.
Jim, on the internet, you go by Jim Grumgram. What shall I call you?
Grum. The reason for that is I started learning the radio business. I had just turned 13 years old in October 1964. And I jumped up to a mine, and from the area of South Carolina where I'm from, most people don't speak the way I'm speaking now.
Oh?
Oh, no. It's a little more country. So I didn't speak that well. And I still don't, but...
It's rural. Rural.
Yes, I suppose so. So I jump up to a microphone at Christmas time at WGOG, and I said, "Hi, I'm Jimmy Grum." And they laughed and laughed and laughed at me. And they kept calling me Grum until it just stuck as a nickname. And now it's funny because what happened at work in the last several years, if someone paged me and said, "Jim, please call extension 5142, I'd never hear it. If they said, "Grum, call extension 5142, I'd hear it.
Wow.
Okay. I missed many a call like that.
Well, hey, I just jumped in and introduced you real fast. We're up for an hour of madcap engineering hilarity, something like that. And maybe going to learn a couple things along the way.
I pulled a few practical jokes that I could probably talk about. Some I can't.
I met you, Jim, by the favor of Facebook. You're on some engineering places on Facebook, and I thought, this guy looks fun. And I love your posts, and I thought, here's the guy who's an engineer. This is not true. Good God. So
I go in public with stuff like that on too.
So obviously at 13 you were on the air, but somehow you got into engineering.
Well, I started learning at 13. They did not put me on the air at 13.
Okay. All right.
It was just a couple of months later they kept training me. I was very fortunate to have come up in the radio business in times when you had smaller market stations that would allow a kid like me to come in. I know I'm not that of an unusual case with an older guy. I don't know how much that would happen anymore, but even engineering, young guys would have a mentor. I never had a mentor for engineering, but I did for announcing. And so they taught me how to speak on the radio, how to read the news, and from paying attention to other radio stations in larger markets, just listening, I learned how to write news, learned how to write commercials, produce commercials. I'm one of these rare people who really enjoys production. In fact, we do on our low power here, we don't have live jocks, but we do have birthdays that we do. And if you've looked on YouTube, you can bring up our past birthdays that we do. And it's like you'll hear a name and then you'll hear a drop. Well, I call them drops or bits, whatever you want to call them, of something funny to make fun of that person. But, the two women owned a radio station in Walhalla, South Carolina.
Walhalla.
Walhalla.
Wow. Okay.
Garden of the Gods. Thus the call sign WGOG. And they allowed me to come in, and there was a gentleman there who was just a few years older than me. As a matter of fact, I think George Allgood was about 19, and for some reason took me under his wing. And, I learned a lot from George. I made George laugh a lot, and we cut up a lot. But George taught me how to speak, and or of course, maybe I just emulated George. Maybe that's what it was. But yeah, I started at a very early age. And you ask about engineering. My wife and I got married right out of high school. We were high school sweethearts. We're still married, and we'd been married a little less than a year, and she starts talking about having children. And I've told people many times that God came down, thumped me in the head and said, "Son, you know, you're not that good on the radio." So I went back to technical school, and you've got some pictures. I don't know if you have a picture. Did I send you a picture of the Vanguard transmitter?
I've got, yes, I believe I got that one in here, but you know, these pictures are simply in alphabetical order. And
I didn't have time to sort them chronologically. So yeah, they're a little bit off. You'll just have to ask me about them as you go.
I got to tell our audience. So I think the best way to have an interview with Jim Grum Graham is to just go through these pictures and let him tell stories.
Oh yeah.
It's fun. Now, expect to learn a little bit because Jim's been a great engineer, done plenty of installations. Yes.
I took the attitude that I didn't know everything, but if I didn't know, I'd learn, and I worked really hard to get things right.
Yeah.
You know, something that's very interesting, I'll do this about engineering that I found to be the case, was if you maintain the equipment, keep it clean, keep it cool, keep the site clean, just keep an eye on it. I don't have a lot of diagnostic skills because my equipment didn't fail very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff I had worked.
How many times did you ever go in behind some other engineer, maybe long forgotten, maybe long gone, but found crazy modifications? And my goal was always just make the thing work the way it did when it came out of the factory.
Not that many mods, no.
Okay.
Messes, yes.
What's that?
Big messes.
Messes, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's jump into these pictures, if you don't mind. And in no particular order except alphabetical. Here we go.
Okay, that is what was the call sign? I have to think.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, they changed them. It was pretty sure that was WGVL.
Okay.
On 1440. It was a four-tower, 5,000-watt full-time station. It was non-directional day and four-tower directional at night. And they decided at corporate I don't remember if we were SFX or Clear Channel at the time, but back in the 2000s, they decided to replace that transmitter that you can see a corner of there to the right. Mm-hmm. That's a BC5H,
okay,
a 5 kilowatt Gates Harris transmitter. And they decided to replace it with a AM6, I believe it's an AM6ABE. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing was the BE transmitter took up less floor space than the 1 kilowatt BC1G that was sitting there where I'm standing in front of it.
Sure.
And that one that's in the picture, I had to screw it to the floor to make the connections in the back because it kept wanting to slide around. It was so lightweight. Yeah, seriously.
I see just beyond your head in that picture, I see that what looks like an antenna monitor.
Yes.
Or a directional.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. It was a four tower array and it was an old one. It had wind charger towers.
Oh.
Yeah. And 70 ohm coax. The whole system was 70 ohms. And the feed line out to the towers was hard line that was I'm not sure who made it, but it had been there since the late 40s. And after I left, vandals found it because it was above ground.
Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not there anymore.
It had to be a nightmare for somebody. Yeah.
All right, let's move on here. What are we looking at here?
Oh, this is 1990. I'm installing a new BE FM35B for WSSL FM in Graycourt. It was licensed to Graycourt. Of course, they ran it out of Greenville. Mm-hmm. And in the background, you see a FM20K and the power supply. And then there's a couple of equipment racks in there involved there, too. That was an interesting transmitter. I actually like that transmitter. It got good tube life. It did not like rebuilt tubes. And I didn't want to do major adjustments to make it work with the rebuild. So, we just bought brand new tubes, but they lasted 5 or 6 years. So it wasn't that often I had to replace them.
That was a tube transmitter, obviously a 35 kilowatt FM. Is that what it was?
Yes. Had one tube in it.
That's a hoss. Wow.
Yeah. It had I forgot the number of the tube, the new tube number, but
might've been a 4CX20,000.
It very well may have been. Yeah. Okay.
I want to ask you, do you remember, many FM transmitters have a quarter wave cavity, but BE was famous for using half wave cavities.
That one had a very interesting, it had a deck in it, but oh my goodness. I can't remember what that thing looked like on the inside. It had a bellows for tuning.
I was just going to say that if it had a bellows, I'm guessing it may very well have been their half wave design.
Yeah. And then it had a, I don't remember how the, output capacitor was arranged in that thing. I know I remember the Continentals a little better. They had two paddles that were behind the tube. One of them was tuning and one was loading. And this particular transmitter, for the life of me, I can't remember what was on the inside of that thing.
Well, I'm sure
I didn't have to get in it that often because, again, once I when I changed the tube, and sometimes in between, depending on how dirty the room was, I would pull the tube, clean the tube socket really delicately, and make sure everything was spick and span, and then put the new tube in it and tune her up, and she'd sit there and run.
Now, Jim, I got to say that, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things I enjoyed about meeting you on Facebook is your sense of humor. You've got a great sense of humor. And you even run a radio station that's called what?
Fun Radio.
Fun Radio.
Yeah. We, in fact, I grabbed some stuff here. Fun Radio actually got started with this CD set. I just didn't know it was Fun Radio getting started. Bless her heart, my wife bought a... she bought a CD player for me. Mm-hmm. This was a long time ago. And what good is a CD player if you don't have CDs? So I had that pack of CDs. And then for a while, I kept Circuit City in business.
Well, Fun Radio, sense of humor, and the next picture you supplied certainly deserves some explanation. What?
Okay.
What's this?
No, sir.
I'm afraid to ask.
You know, most guys love melons, and we'll call them that. And so I'm in a grocery store, I think a Walmart store one day. And for some reason, these two melons were sitting there next to each other. And the little, well, the business end of them, I guess we could call it. I thought, this would be cute if I arranged them to look like, well, lovely lady lumps. We'll call them that. And so, yes, I left that for probably some customer just picked one up and never knew what it was, but who knows? I got a good laugh out of it anyway. My wife is in store. She sees me somewhere laughing. She knows I did something.
Oh, poor wife. And that's a Walmart that Jim is never allowed back in.
Correct. Again. Yeah. They kicked me out. I actually got in real trouble at that same Walmart a little later. They had a sign at the front entrance to the Walmart that said wet floor. I thought it was an instruction. So I did. They didn't like that at all.
Folks, you can see how the hour is about to go, but our next pictures are instructive. We're going to hear more about them and what's going on. Our guest is Jim Grum Graham. I'm Kirk Harnack on This Week in Radio Tech. We'll be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
Welcome back. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Nashville Telos Alliance studio of This Week in Radio Tech. We're having a blast here, and there's more to come. We're talking with my friend Jim Grum Graham. Hey, Jim. Appreciate all the pictures that you've supplied here. And they're not just funny, but some are actually engineering.
No, some serious. You know, it's funny. Many years ago, we didn't take that many pictures. It's kind of a sad thing. I don't have very many pictures of the old days because you didn't take that many pictures.
When you have a roll of film with 12 chances on it, then, you know, yeah, maybe 24 if you bought the big roll. Yeah. So, wow. So let's move on here. What are we looking at here?
I earlier said something about my mentor at WGOG in Walhalla. That's George Allgood in the picture. And that's the on-air studio at WGOG. In the background, I'm thinking those might be the solid state cart machines that were made by Gates at the time.
You're right.
When I got in the business, the cart machine was a pretty new technology in 1964. Prior to that, that same station right there, they'd been on the air since 1959, and they were playing commercials from the little reel-to-reels. A lot of guys remember the 3-inch reels. I didn't do that. By the time I got there, they had the cart machines. And I was thinking last night about when we were doing this today, you see those carts in the lower part of the picture there. In those days, you didn't have backside lubricated tape, which, by the way, every time a box came into the radio station with a big printed on the side of it, backside lubricated tape. I always got tickled. But those carts right there, they actually had put pencil lead, basically, is what it was. There were four strips of pencil lead perpendicular to the spindle, and that's what lubricated the tape.
You know, I may have seen that in some.
You may have.
Yeah, I wondered what was going on with that. Okay. Okay. Interesting. Let's move on. Oh, what is this?
This is around. I think this would have been around 76. In the mid 70s, the FCC came out with some rulings that you couldn't duplicate programming on AM and FM stations. They had a limit depending on the size market you were in.
Right.
And we were in a market where we had, I think the limit was 90 to 95%, you couldn't duplicate. So they bought that automation system there. Now, I could really make that thing stand up and talk. A lot of people didn't like it. But that's an SMC DP2, I think is what it was called. And it used teletype to program it and the keyboard on a desk to program it. And the amazing thing about it is they paid about $75,000 for that thing there.
Oh my goodness.
And you know what? I don't think that's even all of it. I think there's another rack behind me that you can't see that has three carousels in it.
Okay.
And imagine, and that was in the mid 70s. Imagine the amount of money that would be today. Today we buy a computer for less than $750 and put everything in it.
Wow. And still complain about it.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the technology has created new opportunities. I know we've lost a lot of on-air people who are live, and there's a lot of discussion about that. But on the other hand, if it weren't for the computer technology, we couldn't do our low-power FM here. Our LP FM is all here at our home. So we didn't have to, we don't have rent for a tower. And so, we have minimal recurring expenses.
Your LPFM Fun Radio. Do you have a tower there at your house?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we sure do. Go ahead.
How tall a tower is that?
Well, the tower itself is 100 feet.
Okay.
And, the tower came from an old National Guard armory here in the county. It's not far from here. I kept seeing this tower and making jokes that we ought to get that tower somehow, not realizing it actually was not in use. Mm-hmm. And long and short of it is I made a few phone calls, and the last person I talked to said, yeah, if you want that tower, you can have it. You just got to take it down. And I'm like, are you serious? So it's a nice small footprint, self-supporting 100-foot tower.
Wow. You know, working on a tower like that, or trying to run a radio station, paying $75,000 for an automation.
Isn't it something?
It's enough to give you a heart attack.
Yes.
What are we looking at here?
This was an interesting day. This was actually the day after, I think this is the day after my surgery. That's how I would have spent December 31st, 2015, mm-hmm. New Year's Eve. I had 11 blockages of 90 to 95%. Cardiologist said I shouldn't have been walking around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And they did triple coronary bypass. And fortunately, I don't have heart damage from it. That's the other amazing thing.
My goodness.
I had an incident. It wasn't like the heart attacks you see on TV. I just felt really strange one morning, and intelligently, I guess, I went to the doctor. I thought something's not right here. And instead of just trying to go to work, had I done that, I wouldn't be here. That was sort of what pulled the trigger for me to retire.
Ah, okay. That was your sign.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's kind of what did it.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you made it through and there wasn't any damage. You'll be with us for a long time to come.
I hope.
Let's jump back into the equipment here.
That's the BW broadcast transmitter. We, if you can see on the front of that, we were fortunate enough to get, LPFMs can borrow or use the call sign of another radio station if they give you permission.
Okay.
And I don't remember the owners of the station right off the top of my head. I could look it up real quick, but, I contacted the other WFOX and told them what I wanted to do. And they replied pretty quickly and said, yeah, that's fine. Good luck. And so I applied for WFOX and got the call sign. The other thing is, in this area, there was a station that's now owned by Cox in Atlanta. It went by Fox 97. It was WFOX, and it was an oldie station, and it was very popular in this area. And I was really surprised. I thought Cox had put the call sign somewhere else and parked it. Turns out that it wasn't a big company that owned the call sign. So I emailed them. But why they dropped WFOX, I'm not real sure. It's called the River now, I think, and I don't even know the call sign. The Optimod is what's on the air on our WFOX. That Optimod is running nice and gently. It's not set to full fast or anything. And you can see about it runs around 10 to 15 dB of compression. And we've had some comments about how good this thing sounds on the air.
Sure. Hey, I got a quick question about a couple things there. That BW transmitter, is that what power level is that one? Do you remember?
That one will run 300 watts.
Okay. It looked familiar. Actually, at one of my my radio station in Hawaii, we have the 600 watt version of that.
Yes.
And it's a backup. It's ready to go on the air. It's a backup.
Well, this one's been on the air straight since April of 2015.
Oh, good. Okay.
We had the low power FM before I had the heart incident.
Gotcha. The RDS generator between the two things, that looks like a Pura RDS.
Yes. Yeah. A friend of mine actually bought and gave that thing to me.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not here to endorse anybody's or another, but I at some of my radio stations, we have Pura's. Now they keep changing the model. They'll look
yes,
at
they
the
do.
Model, but
yes.
They've been consistently, they just sit there and kind of work for us and they're not
well,
expensive.
Oddly enough, this one, and I'm trying to remember what caused this. I know what it was. When we changed the call sign, I went to the software to go into this box to change the call sign in the RDS. And when I did that, I couldn't access it through the software.
Ah.
And I worked and I worked and I worked with it and had just about decided that I was going to have to buy a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow accessed it through a search engine and found that I could put in command lines. And I looked that up online. I'm not good with command lines at all.
Yeah.
But I stumbled across a command line to turn on the IP ports.
Oh.
They weren't turned on. They got turned off somehow. And I turned that on and boom, there I was accessing it. I was very happy I didn't have to buy another one.
I think many, many engineers are certainly familiar with the Orbin 8100A processor.
Oh, yeah.
That one looks very pretty, but I'm a little curious. Actually, I'm not curious. The one rack unit box immediately below it, but above the CRL.
Oh, that's a...
I think I know what that is.
And yeah, tell me.
And it doesn't surprise me at all that Jim Grum Graham would have one.
No. It is. It's a, what do they call that thing? I can't see it very well.
I can't read either. I've seen it before. It basically does nothing, right?
It's a Funk Logic.
Oh, Funk Logic. That's right.
Funk Logic. It's a Digilog Dynamicator.
That's a Digilog Dynamicator. That's it. You got it.
It has those fake knobs on it that have pop and sparkle and I forgot what all they do. And that meter is just a picture.
Pop and sparkle. Isn't that your stripper name?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
Oh, this looks like a studio rack room.
Yes, it is. You know, that's Eric Rogers standing back there grinning at me. I've pulled some tricks on Eric. One time with Eric right there, this was before we had the flat panel flat panel monitors for computers.
Yeah.
He saw one of our people in there somewhere had a 25-inch monitor, and he's like, oh, man, I want one of those. And so he went on vacation. And he happened to have a computer at the time that you could use the up and down keys, a combination of keys, don't remember what it was, but you could flip the screen. I've not seen that on other computers, but on his particular computer, you could flip the screen 90 degrees, 180, whatever. So while Eric was on vacation, we found one of those monitors so heavy, I had to get someone to help me put it in there. We put it on his desk upside down and then flipped the screen.
Right,
so that when he sat down, the screen was correct, but the monitor was upside down.
Oh, my gosh. What year might this picture be from?
Oh, my goodness. This picture would have been taken probably in the early 2000s.
Okay. Well, I see some Mosley SELs there.
You do? And I'm trying to see if we – yeah, there are – in fact, as a matter of fact, that may have gone back into the – late 90s, because those are the old Dell GX250 computers in the background.
Ah,
and that okay. was, I'm sorry, it would have been a little later than that, because that's when they switched to Prophet Next Gen. We had the original Wizard at first, but those computers were mounted in industrial cases.
Gotcha.
That was some interesting times, but,
well, and lots
had
of
a Novell server. I knew nothing about a Novell server, so that was
obviously lots of classic gear. The one thing I noticed that there's a fair amount of space between the front of the rack and the glass there, so you actually had some room to
a little
operate.
Bit. Yeah.
Hey,
go ahead.
Yeah, I thought we'd. Sorry, I got to carry us along here at some point. I'm gonna hit the Wayback Machine here, and you were talking. Well, you showed us. You mentioned that you're a bit more familiar with Continental transmitters, so looks like we got one right behind you there.
That gentleman to my right is Harold Ward, and Harold was the part-time engineer. He had history with the station. That Collins 831G transmitter. Mm-hmm. He actually originally installed it in the mid '60s. We had two towers at that site, and he had installed it at the other tower up the hill. We had a 660-foot tower and a 1,200-foot tower on that property. The 1,200, of course, became the main after Key Market Communications bought. They bought 100.5. It wasn't WSSL at the time. They changed the call. But anyway, Harold was about 62 or 63. Harold passed away a couple of years after that picture was made. And he helped me down there. Boy, do I look kind of young.
So that transmitter is how much power?
That's a 20 kilowatt. It's the same thing as the Continental 816. It was the original Collins had the original design on those things. It became Collins, then it became Rockwell, I think.
Yeah.
I had, three of those 20 kilowatt transmitters. The other two were actual Continentals, the brown ones. Mm-hmm. This is at the site where earlier you saw me installing that BE-35B.
Right. Okay.
And
okay. Same site.
That's we took that transmitter back up the hill to its original location and put the BE transmitter in its place.
Well, we've got more Continental transmitters coming up, but first we go to this picture. Now, that is not you.
No, that is my lovely wife in 1970. That was my first full-time job, spinning tunes at WLET-FM in Toccoa, Georgia. They moved that station into Atlanta now, I think. Like everything else that had a tall tower and 100 kilowatts, they would move it to the bigger city. But and this was back when you had to get the film developed. And so we took a couple of silly pictures, and that's her sitting in front of the Stereo Statesman Gates console. And the turntables, I don't think you can see the turntables very well, but they were mounted in the cardboard box that that console came in. Those were some interesting days. You'd cue up a record and the turntable would fall. It'd fall down through the hole.
That's so sweet that you met her in high school and you had to go drag her to a radio station.
I know it. She went with, well, in those days, I don't know if it was at that time or not, but when I went back to technical school, I was in school all day long. And she would go with me to work because they didn't care. They didn't mind her being out there. And that was how we got to see one another. And that's how we did it.
Yeah.
She worked at the Tasty Freeze. I picked her up and she'd go to work with me.
I think I dragged a girlfriend to a radio station. Yeah. I'm not sure she enjoyed it a whole lot. Let's see what's next here. Oh, well, that's a,
this is, let me think. Oh, this was, in 93 or so, mm-hmm. when, I worked for WSSL. I think the owner, it was either Capstar or SFX. Capstar was around twice. They claimed they were brand new in around 2000, but they actually were the ones that bought this radio station WSSL when I came to work there. Mm-hmm. And then they bought WMYI. And this is the location where WMYI was located. This was the engineering office, and they had the engineering racks behind the engineer's desk in those days.
Yeah.
And of course you didn't have as much stuff because you didn't have computers.
I do see that classic, Marty looks like an STL-8 in the rack.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, what that one did. We also had that 1440 AM station. So that may have been, because I found a couple of those boxes, the STL-8s mm-hmm. around. I'm real bad about finding old equipment and bringing it back to life. Kind of like me, you know, in a heart attack, and I'm old. I came back to life, by God.
Let's go revisit some Continental. Oh, okay. We have the red and the brown version.
Oh yeah.
And there you are being cute. Good gosh.
Yeah. I got a camera that had a timer on it. And that's how that happened.
Took your own picture?
I sure did.
So the wife wouldn't come back out to the transmitter.
Oh no, she didn't like to go to these transmitters. No. That transmitter back there, I cannot for the life of me, 816 HD, I can't remember the model number, but that's the one that Continental came out with to pass HD radio.
Okay.
And that thing was not efficient, and man, did it put out a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that one on the right, after I cleaned it up, she was sweet. And boy, the red one was too. It just would cook a tube.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it used a 4CX20,000. That's actually, I was told that's actually a 35 kilowatt transmitter, and they tune it down to run HD. It's a 20 when they sell it, it's 20, but it's actually based on 35 kilowatt transmitter.
Well, and we could pause for a second and sure. explain that, because FM transmission, FM amplification mm-hmm. can be done in an amplifier mode that's called Class C. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you don't have to amplify every single bit of the original waveform, the wave that's coming in. You want to amplify it and make it bigger, but because it's frequency modulated, you can actually, it's kind of like kicking a tire, like turn your bicycle upside down and give the tire kick. Kick, mm-hmm. kick, mm-hmm. kick. Well, you get what you want. You get the tire going around and around because the tire is limited to going around and around. Mm-hmm. And you just have to input some power to it. Class C amplification is very similar. You have this input signal coming in, and you don't have to make the output. Well, the output is naturally going to be very similar to the input. You just give it a kick of power, and the circuitry that surrounds the tube allows this kick to create a signal that is identical to the incoming signal.
Mm-hmm.
HD radio is different. You've got signal there where the amplitude is critical and the phase relationships are critical. You've got all these little carriers out there. It has to be amplified. I'm not sure it has to be amplified class A, but maybe class AB. It has to be amplified in such a way that you're very true to the original, and therefore the tube has to operate in an area where it's not as efficient. And so I think it's pretty amazing that they could design an amplifier that would do both at the same time.
Yes.
And I'm not saying reasonably efficiently. It obviously was not. It made a lot of heat. But the alternative at the time were the 9 dB hybrids, where you would have a second transmitter making the HD. You'd combine the two, the analog and the HD together, and you'd lose 90% or so of the HD. So you had to, either way, it was a mess.
That's called high level combined. I had the space combined, and I had that transmitter, and our class A at the time ran, I think it was a BE that would run the HD radio through it. Yeah. It was solid state. That was interesting. That was an interesting sight too. That was the one that I had snakes.
Oh gosh. Let's go back. That one right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sight is, I had two sites in the mountains, and this particular site had a creek 50 feet away from the building. Mm-hmm. And I guess snakes, I'm not real familiar with what snakes like, but apparently they kind of like the water.
Yeah.
And, we had to get three copperhead snakes removed from our generator housing outside one time so we could work on the generator. Had to get Greenville County Animal Control up for that one. I was being the tagline guy for a tower crew, and I almost stepped. I don't know what kind of snake it was, but I saw him boogieing away when I almost stepped on him. He was getting out of there. But I just kept on trudging, man. I had that rope. I wasn't letting go of that rope.
All right. Look at this. A classic controller. Oh, I'm going to guess from the 70s, but you tell me.
This would have been around 1980.
Okay.
85.
Oh, okay. All right.
This was a production room at WANS. We called it Anderson's Big Anus. I'm afraid we did. We didn't say that on the air.
No, of course not.
But, you know, out in public, we'd say, yeah, we're in the Big Anus. The people, you know, I was kind of funny over the years. I fought for a long time to maintain playing records because the cart machine technology at the time, we couldn't afford it. So I tried to push playing records. And of course, PDs and people didn't like that. They also wanted the compression out the yin yang on the air. And I fought that. And somewhere around 86, 87, I threw up my hands on that and carded music. So that turntable over in the corner was the turntable that had a really high dollar cartridge and a high dollar preamp on it. And that's the one they were supposed to dub music with, whether they actually did it or not. To your far left, you can see an Ampex 440.
Yeah.
I personally did a tremendous amount of quarter track tape editing on that machine because I had it installed so that it was down flat on the cabinet and had a splicing block right there in front of it that was screwed down.
I see it.
It was nice. Yeah. And people can make fun of me, but I like the LPB consoles. I just like the layout, and they were very simple. And like me, I'm a very simple man. Want to see my knobs?
Nothing wrong with it. What I see is that remote starts in the custom.
I stole that idea. I didn't come up with that one. The console is sitting on a 3-inch riser, and each one of those buttons will start wherever it's connected to.
Yeah,
it's real handy.
Cool.
WMYI FM 102.5 at the original building. That is an FM25K in the foreground.
Oh, yeah.
The power supply was behind it. And, of course, an FM20H, that gray transmitter back there was an old transmitter. That site had to use phase converters. That 20H back there was an interesting thing with that one. It kept losing there was a resistor in each one of the IPA tubes. It used the 4CX 250Bs.
Yeah.
And those resistors kept failing. And I'd worked on these particular transmitters before, and I thought there's some reason those resistors are burning up. And so, when I found the package of the resistors, I discovered they were wire wound. You don't want to put a wire wound resistor in an RF circuit.
Unless you also want to choke, and you didn't also want to choke. Oh, no, wow. And
it didn't like that. It'd burn them up, man. So I've bought some carbon resistors and put them in there. Problem solved.
Were the wire wounds from the factory, or had somebody replaced them with
replaced them with wire wounds.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
that sure did.
That's not an uncommon mistake. I believe I had seen that kind of thing before.
Oh, I've made a few mistakes. I've destroyed a couple of Simpson 260s doing stupid stuff, but
Well, I'm sure
I've never dropped a back. I've never dropped a final amplifier tube. That was something I always feared doing was dropping one of those $6,000 tubes on the floor, because if you do that, it's pretty much history.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's whatever that nasty chemical that they have, some kind of beryllium.
Well, then there's that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, we are talking to Jim Grum Graham.
That's me.
From Sandy Springs, South Carolina. He runs Fun Radio and LPFM, and he's retired now. And we're just going to go through a few more pictures from memory lane and learn a bit more.
I send you any pictures for WFOX?
Do what now?
Did I send you any of the
pictures? We've got a good 10 more pictures to come.
Let's go quick.
We're going to take a quick break and pay for this first. Pay for all this glory. We're going to be back in just a minute or two. It's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Jim Graham. We'll be right back. And our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcaster General Store and at Henry Engineering, maker of... I let the cat out of the bag. If we follow this Cat 5 cable to the other end, we can see that it easily hooks up to this, the Henry Superlight. Now, this is not carrying IP data. This is just a convenient way to string together Henry Superlights. You can set an address in here with a couple of jumpers, and then you can have the Henry Superlight. What it does is it turns on your LED tally lights in your studios. That's what the Superlight is made for. It will source up to half an amp at 12 volts to turn on your LED-based lights. Now, this is not for controlling good old 110-volt incandescent Edison bulbs. No, this is for modern LED fixtures and even for the lights that are maybe on your microphone, on your mic arms. The Henry Superlight is today's modern-day version of the Henry Super Relay. Remember the Henry Super Relay? I probably installed a dozen or more of those, and maybe you installed even more than that. Well, the Superlight is a logic and control interface for controlling low-voltage studio tally lights. Again, as I said, it can directly power 12-volt DC LED lights up to half an amp. It includes a flasher circuit as well as a double-pole, double-throw relay output that you can use for any low-voltage switching, like speaker muting or other utility use. And if a half an amp's not enough for you, if you've got more LEDs to run than that, you can externally source up to an amp. Use an external power source, and that should run about anything you want. These two RJ45 connectors let you hook up control wiring with easy compatibility with Axia X nodes or Weetnet IP blades and similar installations that use Cat 6 and Cat 5 wiring. So check that out. It's the Henry Superlight. And you know, Henry Engineering, you ought to check out their website. They make all kinds of stuff that engineers like you and me need. And a lot of folks are just familiar with the Henry Matchbox or the Super Relay, and they don't really know what else Henry makes. Well, they make all kinds of things, like the AES DigiSwitch 1x3, the AES Digital DA 2x4, the Auto Switch, the Back UPS, that's a cool little box, the Guest Pod 2, the Logic Converter, the Matchbox HD, the Micro Mixer 4x2, the Mini Pod. You can see I'm going in alphabetical order here. The Multiport, the Multiphones Master, the Sports Pod, the Stereo Switch 2, the Super Light that I just showed you, the Super Relay 2, it's an update to the Super Relay, the Talent Pod, the Twin Match, the USB Matchbox 2, and the USDA 2x4. And there's even more things that Henry has, including a terrific surge arrester that you ought to check out if that's a problem for you. So Henry Engineering, it's Henry ENG Henryeng.com is the website, henryeng.com, and check out Hank Landsberg's amazing collection of stuff that every engineer needs to build a studio. And you can order them all from Broadcaster's General Store. Their website, easy peasy, bgs.cc. BGS, as in Broadcaster's General Store, .cc, bgs.cc. And you know, they're really set up for phone calls. They really are. You know, that's such a refreshing thing in this day and age when you call and you get voicemail jail. You can call BGS at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Talk to Jessica or anybody there at Broadcaster General Store. Buck is there. Usually, any of them there at Broadcaster General Store. Check them out. 352-622-7700. Really thank Henry Engineering, Hank Landsberg, and BGS for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We're back. It's This Week in Radio Tech from the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Kirk Harnack, and my guest here is the inimitable. Is that the right word? Oh, what? What? What is that?
Pardon me.
Well, at least you did it with a fart horn.
That's right.
That's right.
Saving yeah, there's grace. there's no fumiges in here now.
All right, stand by. We're in for the troubleshooting teaching section of the show. Jim, what is going on here?
Well, that's kind of how I discovered WSSL-FM. To get the, let me think about this a minute. There was another exciter on the Collins transmitter to the left of this picture. And if I recall, to get subcarrier, which I think was being used for telemetry, I'm pretty sure that's what it was, 67 kilohertz subcarrier.
Yeah.
Someone had gone and put the SCA generator card on an extender board so they could access the ports on the pins.
Yeah.
And took that over and clipped it to a piece of coax that went over to the BE exciter.
Oh my goodness.
And of course I come in, I think we kicked that thing one day walking across the room and maybe knocked the, we didn't break it, but we caused it to act funny. And it swung the transmitter's deviation so much, the transmitter kicked off.
So it looks like they needed the 67 kilohertz generator card from the Harris exciter that we see right there,
but
they needed to go into a different exciter. And so they gained access to it this way because it didn't have any reason to bring the 67 kilohertz out the back of the Harris. That was internal to the exciter.
Correct.
So, okay. All right. I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
And they were also using that subcarrier for the MS, that was an MX-15, I think MS probably, but, that's how it was done. And I don't remember, there was something that I kept hearing on the air. Obviously RF was getting back into that.
Yeah.
And it was, there was something that was nasty on the air. Don't remember what it was, but, at some point I either found or I grew up in small market radio where we didn't have much. So I was pretty good at scrounging up older equipment and making it work for little or nothing. I believe it or not, I'm still that way. I never could shake that one.
Let's move on here. Next picture. What is this?
WGOGAM in Walhalla. They bought that transmitter after I left up there in 1973. I don't remember the year they bought that, but that's a BC1H.
Okay. Yeah.
And they brought me back up about 10 years later to do their technical work. And so I took that shot.
Good deal. All right. Next one. Ooh.
Yeah, buddy. This is 1984. And that was the WANS on 1280. We were 5 kilowatt non-D daytime and a kilowatt 3-tower directional at night. This is a new tower site we were building in 84. Mm-hmm. And my wife had drawn the Ghostbusters picture for, she was a preschool teacher and, I think that's where it was. And she was going to throw it out. No, don't throw it away. We'll put it on that MW5 out there.
Who are you going to call?
Yeah, the MW5, that was a good transmitter too. I kept that baby running for about 10 years.
I took care of an MW5 actually starting around 1984 myself.
Really?
It was at WPAD in Paducah, Kentucky.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I one time strung a bunch of limiters for some reason. I had a whole bunch of AM limiters. I strung them all in series and cranked them up as far as they'd go and got that transmitter doing about 165% positive modulation until I shorted the RF tube. So anyway.
Let's move on here. What?
Yeah, buddy. That's that same site where the MW5 is. And that's our son, Jason, who is now 47 years old and has two daughters.
Wow.
And one of them is engaged to be married, and the other one just graduated from high school. And there he is standing on one of the brand new supports for those three. That was a sweet site. That site was broadbanded. Mm-hmm. It sounded marvelous on the air.
So that's one. That's a tower base.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Where a tower's going to go shortly. Yeah.
Okay. If anyone's familiar with the FM20H 20K series, not the 25s, but the 20Hs, that thing had a set of four CX250B tubes in it, in sockets that were a nightmare to get to. And by the time we were doing this, is Steve Turner, we put him in the chair and rolled his behind up into, well, actually his head, but rolled him up into that transmitter so he could solder those solder joints on those tube sockets. Man, I I got to a point that I couldn't see them even with my glasses on. That was so tight under there. That was a really terrible. Wish there was a way to take those take those sockets out,
yeah,
and put all the components on them and then put them back in. I was dreaming up ways to do that when we swapped out transmitters and
so that looks like a mechanics creeper that's a foot and a half off the ground.
It's a chair.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Gosh. All right.
This is a great picture. This shows in 1985. It was 85. This, we weren't using those three towers, but that's where WANS was when I went to work there. And by the way, they hired me in 1973, and I thought I was hot stuff because they'd hired me at a top 40 radio station from a small market AM. I thought I was, man, I'm stepping up here. Then about 2 weeks later, I found out the reason they hired me was because I had a first class FCC license. And they only hired first phones because of the directional. And I had a little bit of an ego deflation there, but that's okay.
That's like your girlfriend finding out you only like her because her daddy's rich.
Yeah. Okay. I often told my wife, you married me for my money.
So obviously the towers are gone and the dentist came in.
I tried to take the picture on the right-hand side as close to where I was standing in the 85 picture as I could.
Wow. Wow.
And that's what it looks like now.
Things do change. I know the tower that I used to work on is now a Taco Bell in Cleveland, Mississippi. Taco Bell. Yeah, absolutely.
And right there is again, WANS. I don't know what year this would have been. It was in the 70s, obviously, after 73, because that's a McMartin B802 console. I probably had become the engineer. I worked there for a year before the engineer that was before me left, and they dumped it on me. It's funny, we think that radio stations mistreat their engineers. And I think back a lot in those days. I was the disc jockey there, did afternoon drive, and they came to me because they knew I had engineering schooling. And they said, we'll pay you $10 a week more if you'll be the engineer. So if you really think about it, it wasn't disrespected, but it wasn't respected enough to give you a full-time gig. That came along about 5 years after that picture was taken. They actually made me full-time engineer, which in hindsight is kind of surprising. I still did a lot of other stuff. I did commercials and production.
You've got something in that control room that I see quite plainly there that I didn't see much in any radio station, and that is you had two different brands of cart machines in the same room, and usually they would fight. We would never ever do that. So you got three ITC machines of the premium line, and then you got a couple of the Gates machines. How did they get along?
I don't remember. Okay. That's too long ago. I know that the ITC machines and their dampened solenoid and chain assembly for yanking up that pinch roller was marvelous compared to what was in those Gates machines.
Ka-chunk.
Yeah. Ka-chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were. Yeah.
Wow.
Ka-chunk. They really were. They were loud.
Let's hit a couple more pictures real quick before our last break. Oh, well, this looks nice. What's going on?
That's Bill McCown. Again, WANS. We were doing a remote broadcast at Anderson Mall for a charity. Mm-hmm. Do you know who that girl in the middle is?
No idea.
Valerie Bertinelli.
Oh, my gosh. I thought it looks like I couldn't think of her name, but yes. Wow.
Yep. That's Valerie Bertinelli. And one of the guys at the radio station, he had a face for radio, as I do. Bill McCown is who that is on the left. And then I'm standing there like a goofball trying to ask a very pretty girl, you know, and with me, you get around a pretty girl like that. And I just go.
That's what I would have said if I'd interviewed her. I would have said,
pretty much. Yeah. Those were some interesting times.
Indeed. All right. One more picture before we take our break. This is
my, that White House we saw a few minutes ago with the three towers on the left.
Yeah.
This was my office, so to speak. It wasn't really an office. It was just a corner. Mm-hmm. And to the right-hand mm-hmm. side of that was a workbench. And that was the engineer's corner.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's about all we have now. That cart machine, was that a Fidelipack? A tapecaster.
Tapecaster.
Yeah.
Or Spotmaster. Spotmaster, okay. Tapecaster, something like that. Yep. That's what it is. And I used to load cartridges, wine cartridges, and that was my put it in something and make sure it works machine. I also had that tied back over to the mod monitor for the AM station. And one day, if I may say this, we had a guy who was working a ball game or something, mm-hmm. and he wasn't accustomed to using the room he was in. So me being a little bit of a prankster, somewhere along the way, we found a tape of what was called an orgasmic woman.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, no. Really?
And we put that into the air monitor, into that studio where he had just finished.
Oh my goodness.
And started playing, and the poor guy, he came out going, "My God, what's going on here? Where's that coming from?" You know, freaking him out.
Did you ever Rickroll anybody by putting that song on a cart instead of the song that was supposed to be on there?
Had a guy who we had what they call personalized IDs, which was a fanfare drum roll. And then they'd come on and say, "Now more hit music with Jim Graham," you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, so we had this one guy, he was just, I don't know how to explain it. He just did everything by rote. And one day I took the tape out of his cart and put it in another one. And on that cart, we had two times it said, "Now here's more hit music with Dan Scott." But the third time was just the music bed. There was no voice.
Okay.
And he never caught it. Yeah, he played the tape, and when it was time to start a song, he just started the song. He never caught on to the fact that nobody said anything.
Jim, we're running short on time. We got five pictures to go. We're going to take a quick break. Quick break. Yep. Jim Grum Graham is our guest here today at This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio. We've got stories about WANS and water coming up, plus a look back at a Vanguard transmitter. We'll be right back after this. Here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, and I'm telling you about a new product that from Angry Audio that we've needed for decades. How many times have you, an engineer, had to repair a headphone plug or the headphone jack, either on the audio console or maybe on like a studio hub headphone amplifier like this one that fits nicely in a Decora box? So you got your headphone plugged in there, and the jack gets up, forgets his headphones around. Maybe you got a guest. Guests aren't used to wearing headphones. They get up, they walk away, and yank this thing out. Now you've got a repair to make. Well, check this out. This is the disconnector, the headphone disconnector. I'll hold it over my forehead so you can see a little bit better. From Angry Audio, they get up and walk away, and bam, it just comes right apart. And look, it's so sexy. It just goes right back together with magnetically, and it actually works. I've played with this a lot, and it works so well. Just boop, oh, got up and walked away. No more repairs to make because the disconnector it's kind of like the MagSafe connectors on your Apple computer, right? The power connector. It just comes right apart. Look at that. What if you put it back on backwards? Well, it won't because it's magnets. So they repel the wrong way, right? And they attract the right way. So your left stays left and your right stays right. There you go. Check that thing out. They also have it. This is the quarter inch headphone size, but it also comes in the 3.5 millimeter size. And you can mix and match. You can go from this size, the quarter inch size, if you plug into the 3.5 or vice versa. Anyway, the disconnector is the same. AngryAudio.com. It's the headphone disconnector. And it works, of course, with the headphone amps like the Studio Hub one, which you can get from Angry Audio, or the Angry Audio Design, the one that won't snag your pantyhose. Let's see. We'll plug it in there. This is mounted under the console, so it's good and secure. And if you walk away with the headphones, bam, just comes right apart. Check it out from angryaudio.com. Hey, we got some word from Max Connect Wireless. We'll be right back.
I'm Gary Morrow, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Gary's checking out this version, the Cradlepoint version, but there's also one from Pepwave. But you know what? It doesn't really matter what the 4G LTE modem is. It doesn't matter what brand it is, because that's not important. What's important is the SIM card that goes in it. It's Max Connect Wireless. They have their own APNs, whatever APN means, I forget. But it means that you get prioritized data, not like all those other schlubs at the event, at the Coliseum, at the ball field. You get prioritized data over everybody else except first responders. And that means that your data gets through and you get a fixed IP address. Really cool. Max Connect Wireless, maxconnect.com. Look, it's spelled funny. Look at the screen. I'll have a link in the show notes. M-A-X-X and then a K-O-N-N-E-C-T, maxconnect.com. Check them out. Thanks to Josh Bone for inventing this cool thing and working out all the legal details and the business relationships to make all this happen. It's not something that you or I could do very easily at all. And Josh has really done it. Max Connect Wireless. All right. Hey, we're going to run right back into our last segment of our show with Jim Graham. We're back on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio. Jim Graham is our guest here. We've been enjoying stories of derring do and old stuff and some jokes. And this looks like no joke. What's this?
That was February 20, 1989. I remember that day well because I fell off of our 1,000-foot tower. And I know a lot of guys have had this happen where ice has damaged the roof.
Right. Right.
But it damaged the roof really badly, and water got into both transmitters. I don't know if there's any more pictures of that or not, but
there are. So let's see what we got here. The first thing I thought was, excuse me, I'm taking a shower.
No, yeah.
No, I'm avoiding the shower. Well, what's this?
Yeah. Oh, no, the water was everywhere. And yeah. When I got in there, it was still falling out of the ceiling or the roof. There wasn't a ceiling. Mm-hmm. And there's that transmitter there, the blue one, water got into the control side of it. So that was a good thing in that case. It didn't do very much damage. Oh. The only component I actually had to replace was the IPA transformer. Oh. And it ran for several hours before that transformer gave up the ghost.
Yeah.
The backup transmitter, which was on the air on a lower antenna, because of so much reflected, we had so much ice. I'm surprised that tower didn't fall.
Yeah.
But there's an FM20H facing that transmitter. That's probably behind the 20H.
Yeah, it looks like there's an air intake on the right.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Comes in, and water air.
Water was coming down off the roof, and it was going down into the power amplifier, the tube of this particular transmitter, and that transmitter was on the air. And it really did some damage in that transmitter.
Now, with that plastic on that, was that transmitter able to be on the air right there?
Oh, no, I had to turn them off.
They're off.
They were, they were off the air, yeah.
Okay, cool. All
right. And the ice coming off hit the roof of the building, and I didn't realize it was as large as it was. Mm-hmm. And it shook the whole place and scared me so bad, I just ran out, got in the car, and got about 300 or 400 feet away from that tower. And they were mad. The program director got mad at me because I wouldn't go back in. I'm like, I'm not going up there.
I had a piece of ice fall off a 700-foot tower and hit me in the back.
Oh, yeah.
I was pretty, good thing it hit me in the head. It might have done some improvements, though.
Well, I know that feeling.
So we got transmitters off the air. Here's a transmitter that most people wished was off the air, because it usually was.
Well, that transmitter. All
right, you got a better story.
Yeah, you know, that transmitter, it was very much like an FM transmitter. They actually had an exciter, modulated the audio. I can't remember how much power came out of the exciter, but it went straight to the grid of a 4CX3000 tube. The transmitter was AB1, I think, was the amplifier. It was not very efficient, like 35% efficiency.
Right.
But, and of course, in those days, we didn't have audio processing that would just really bang away at the clip, at the peaks. But that thing had a frequency response that went out to 16,000.
I heard it had great frequency response.
And it really sounded good, but people didn't know how to work on it. It really wasn't that. I didn't know how to work on anything in those days.
Oh, the Vanguard one. And one more picture.
Oh, yeah. I've shared that a while because I don't drink or smoke or chase women, but I do have a vice or two. This is one of them.
Oh, my goodness. All right. That's a good one to end the show on. Oh, Jim,
I appreciate it, we're about out of time.
I have enjoyed spending this hour with you.
Well, bless your heart. If you get me started, then I just won't shut up. In fact, I have a card here. Come to think of it, I forgot I have these cards. Let's see if you can read that.
Help! I'm talking. I can't shut up.
I've handed those to people.
Oh, gosh. Well, we got to get together and have a Diet Dr. Pepper.
There you go.
That'd be good.
There's a Cracker Barrel 2 miles from here.
You know, I got a Cracker Barrel 2 miles from me, but we don't live next to each other. It's in Tennessee. There has to be one at every exit. It's a law.
That's true. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
This is exit 19. That would be 19A.
19A.
Off of Interstate 85.
I'll make my way there one
day. Drive on down.
We got to go. Jim Grum Graham, thank you for being with us. And you'll find Jim at what, funradio.something?
It's actually foxfunradio.com.
Foxfunradio.com. All right. We'll see you there. All right. Thanks so much, Jim Graham. I'm Kirk Harnack. Thanks to all our sponsors. Be sure you go visit them. We'll have another great show coming up next week. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.